of such unabashed passion that I think I will come again merely from the look in his eyes. Damien, I whisper, and it is as if his name is a trigger. I see the rapture cut through his body. I feel him tighten against me, his body going tenser, and then the warm release as he comes inside me. He exhales, then sags against me. Nikki, he says. I know, I whisper. His lips brush softly over mine, a tender kiss that contrasts the wildness of our coupling and is just as perfect. He is soft now and slips out of me. My thighs are sticky, and though I know I have to, I don't want to wipe away the feel of him on my skin.
Here, he says.
He has a handkerchief in his hand, and he gently cleans me up, then adjusts my dress.
Good as new, he says.
Better, I say. He strokes my hair, then traces the line of my ear, then brushes his thumb over my lip. It is as if he is trying to prove to himself that I am real.
I didn't like the way I felt today,
he finally says.
Seeing you like that, knowing you were angry with me.
I didn't like it either, I admit.
I suppose there's something to be said for makeup sex.
Definitely. He takes my hand.
I meant what I said, Nikki. I don't want this to end. I don't want us to be over.
I look at his face, at the chiseled expression and the firm, demanding eyes, and I am confused. I know, I say. I don't either. He strokes my cheek, then curls a strand of hair around my finger.
No, he says. I need to be clear. I don't want our arrangement to end. You're mine, and there are rules. And I want our game to continue.
Chapter 15. Our game. The force of these unexpected words crashes over me, and I take a step backward. He reaches out, and though I take his hand without hesitation, I find that I am shaking my head. Not necessarily in protest, but in confusion. I don't understand.
I think you do, and I think you want it too. Tell me, Nikki, did you leave your panties at home because you like the way it feels, or because you like knowing that you're open to me? That I can touch you, that I can fuck you, whenever and wherever I want.
I swallow, because he is right. More than that, I understand now the melancholy I saw in his eyes Thursday night, followed by the possessiveness when he claimed me after midnight. He is right. I am his. How can it be otherwise when he is inside my heart now? But this? He is watching me closely, examining me with the same implacable analysis that he uses to vet a business transaction or a financial report. But I am a woman, and my emotions don't follow the line of a ticker tape. He knows that too, of course, and beneath the hard, logical intellect, I see the soul-deep vulnerability. He wants this. Maybe he even needs it. And he has handed all of the power of this moment to me. My heart twists, because the truth of it is that I want it too. Isn't that why I felt lost all night? I discovered a new side to myself when we played our game, and despite being his, I felt more liberated than I ever had, more in control of myself and my emotions, more centered, I think. As I brush my thumb over the finger that I had so tightly bound only moments before. I am still holding tight to the side of the glass case. As I glance down and see the two Bradbury books, I cannot help but shiver as I think of the story Damien told me. I picture him, young and strong, riding his bike to escape his father, riding to meet his hero, a man who crafted worlds out of ink and imagination, insubstantial, but real enough to a boy who needed to escape. Is that what he's doing now? Crafting a false reality out of smoke and mirrors, and tempting me into the fantasy with him? But it's not fantasy that I want with Damien. I want the reality. The moments, like the Bradbury story, when Damien lets me in enough to see a bit of his past and a piece of his heart. My chest tightens as I shift my gaze from the glass case to Damien's equally transparent eyes. He is awaiting my answer, and I want to melt against him and whisper, "Yes, yes, of course, yes." But I stand still, frozen by the fear that if I do, I will be letting myself get pulled into something that isn't and never can be real. "Why?" I ask. "Before, you said that you wanted me. But you have me now, with or without the game." I lift my leg and point toward the emerald ankle bracelet. "I'm still wearing it, Damien. You know I'll always wear it. So why? What difference does it make?" He tilts his head toward the glass case.
"You say you want me to open up more," he says, and I marvel at the way he always knows what I'm thinking. "I want that too. I don't want secrets between us, Nikki."
"You told me about the tennis center," I say.
"Not everything," he replies.
I stay perfectly still, because I know that is true.
"I need parameters, Nikki. Especially now. I need to know."
He cuts himself off and looks away, his jaw clenching as he wrestles with the words.
"I need to know that you will be here, with me, no matter what."
He looks so vulnerable, and I am humbled that I have so much power over a man with strength such as Damien. "Don't you already know that? I do." There's something dark in the eyes that look back at me.
"How can you, when there are still so many things you don't know?"
He is not saying anything I haven't thought of, but for a moment, I am afraid. What dark secrets does Damien have that still remain buried? The thing is, I understand better than anyone why he wants the facade of the game in place if he's going to try to open up to me. I cut myself in order to cope with the horrors of my childhood. But what did Damien do? Nothing except conquer the world and learn to bury his secrets deep. I glance down at the books in the glass case and can't help the smile that touches my lips. Even the little things are a big step for Damien. But the shit in his past, the things like Sarah Paget and the guilt he felt over that poor girl's suicide, those are the kinds of things that Damien needs to say with Annette. The truth rips through me. The game is his net. And once that net is in place, doesn't it make sense that the physical between us can strengthen the emotional? Maybe I'm manufacturing a justification, but there's no denying that I want what he's offering. That desire, however, doesn't quell the lingering fear that still bubbles inside me. Damien must see my hesitation, because he reaches for my hand. Only then do I realize that I have been unconsciously twisting my once-abused left finger between the thumb and forefinger of my right hand.
"Can you tell me?"
he asks gently. I swallow and try to will the words to come. "I'm scared," I confess.
"Of what?"
"Of you," I say, then immediately regret the words when I see confusion and hurt flash in his eyes. "No, no, not like that." I move closer and press my palms against his cheeks. You are the best thing that has ever happened to me.
That does sound terrifying.
I grin, grateful to him for putting me more at ease. Sometimes I'm afraid that I'm using you. I pause, waiting for him to make a joke about how he would be very happy for me to use him any way that I like. But he remains silent, watchful, and I realize that he understands how hard this is for me. Like a crutch, I mean. I think of the scars that mar my thighs, of the string wrapped tight around my finger, of the weight of a knife in my hand, and the ecstasy of that first fiery sting when the blade slices through skin. Most of all, I think of how much I've needed all of those things, and of the scars I now bear as testament to my weakness. I swallow, then look down, not wanting to meet the eyes of this man who already sees so much inside me. I'm afraid that you're a replacement for the pain.
I see,
he says, but there is no emotion in the words. Not anger or hurt. Nothing. And then there is silence. I draw a breath, but I don't look up. I'm too afraid of what I will see on his face. Only seconds pass, but they are heavy, full of the weight of unsaid things. Then he tucks his fingertip under my chin and tilts my head so that I must either close my eyes or look at him. I look and immediately have to blink back tears, because it isn't anger or hurt or pity that I see. It is adoration, and possibly even a little bit of respect. Damien?
Oh, baby.
He takes a step toward me, and I see the force of will that pulls him to a stop, staying just far enough from me to give me space, but close enough to give me strength.
Tell me what the pain does for you.
You know, I say. I've told him all this before.
Humor me.
It grounds me, I say, as a tear rolls down my cheek. It centers me. It gives me strength.
I see.
He brushes his thumb across my cheek, wiping away my tear. I'm sorry, I say.
I'm not.
There's a flicker of a smile at the corner of his mouth, and I find that my fear is fading, that I am, in fact, softly hopeful.
You humble me, Nikki. Don't you see that?
It must be clear from my expression that I do not, because he goes on.
If I do all those things for you, soothe you, center you, give you strength, then that is worth more to me than every penny I have earned building Stark International.
I start to speak, but words don't come. I haven't thought of it that way before.
But baby, he continues, it's not true. The strength is in you. The pain is just your way of mining it. And as for me, I like to think that I am a mirror for you. That when you look at me, you see the reflection of everything you really are.
I am crying openly now, and he moves to a nearby coffee table and brings me a box of tissues. I wipe my nose and sniffle, feeling overwhelmed and foolish, but blissfully happy. You talk as though you love me, I say. He doesn't answer, but his slow smile lights his eyes. He steps closer, one hand cupping the back of my head as his lips close over mine, in a kiss that starts out sweet and gentle, but ends up so deep and demanding that it curls through me all the way down to my toes.
Say yes, baby,
he says, breaking the kiss.
Say that you are mine.
How long? I ask, breathlessly. But he doesn't answer. He doesn't need to. I see the answer in his eyes. For as long as it takes. For as long as we want. for as long as I consent to be his. He says nothing, merely stands in front of me. So much rides on my answer, and yet his eyes are calm, his stance casual. Damien is a man who shows nothing he doesn't want to show. And yet there is so much he wants to show to me, and so much that I want to share with him. I hesitate only a moment longer, and only because I want to look at him. I want to drink in this man who has more strength than any human I have ever met, and yet is willing to humble himself before me. How can I have thought that he has shared too little with me? Not specific events, maybe, but Damien has shown me his heart. "Yes," I say, holding out my hand. "We have a deal, Mr. Stark." The smile that spreads across his face is slow and wicked, and I laugh out loud. "Oh, dear," I say.
"Sweetheart, you have no idea."
He gives my hand a tug.
"Come on."
Considering we'd both been MIA from a party that he is hosting in his own home, in part to celebrate a portrait of me that now hangs on his wall, I assume that the reason we ascend back up the service elevator is to slide seamlessly back into that party. The first person we see when we step into the small hallway that leads to the kitchen is Gregory, Damien's distinguished, gray-templed valet.
"Miss Fairchild and I are going out."
I blink in surprise. Gregory shows no reaction at all.
"Of course, Mr. Stark. I'll take care of supervising the cleanup and closing out the house."
"We're leaving?" I whisper once Gregory has moved away and Damien is propelling me into the main area.
"We are," he says.
I consider arguing. Emily Post and Miss Manners flow in my blood, not to mention the even stricter social rules of Elizabeth Fairchild. One does not leave one's own party. There are rules, proprieties that must be observed, and social niceties that must be respected. Whatever Damien has in mind can wait, and I should say as much. I should put my foot down and insist that we stay here, mingling and making polite conversation. Instead, I mentally bitch-slap my mother's rule book and stay blissfully silent. We make three additional stops. First, at Giselle, who seems baffled but doesn't argue. I wear my practiced plastic smile as she and Damien talk. I'm not as put off by her as I was earlier, but neither do I intend to enlist her as my new best friend. Next, we track down Evelyn and Blaine to say both congratulations and goodbye. I'm in the middle of a very proper handshake with Blaine when we both look at each other and laugh.
"Come here,"
he says, and pulls me into a hug. The hug I receive from Evelyn is even bolder, and as she holds me close, I hear her whisper,
"Glad I'm not the only one getting a little tonight."
"Only a little?" I reply, then smile as she laughs wickedly.
"And there it is, Texas," she says, releasing me. "That's why I like you."
She aims a finger at me.
"This week," she says, "photos and wine and talking trash, and not necessarily in that order."
"It's a date," I say, then realize my camera's downstairs in the library.
"Leave it," Damien says, when I say as much. "I promise you won't need it."
"I don't know," I counter. "I can't think of a more beautiful sight than you standing naked in front of a window."
"Are you under the impression there will be nakedness involved tonight?"
"I'm hopeful, Mr. Stark. I'm very, very hopeful." Jamie is the last person we seek out, and we find her at a table on the balcony, deep in conversation with a tousle-haired guy in a Hawaiian print shirt. "Oh no, Jamie," I think. "Not another one. Not after going on and on about rain." "Hey, you two," she says, looking up at us. Louis, this is my roommate Nikki. I'm guessing you already know Mr. Stark. As Damien and Louis do the meet and greet, Jamie's eyes dart to me. Everything okay? I nod. Everything's fine. I glance at Louis. Are you? She wrinkles her nose and gives the slightest shake of her head. Louis is a director, she says breezily. We were talking television. Great house, she adds, turning her attention to Damien. Greater party.
Glad you think so. Nikki and I just came by to say our goodbyes.
Oh. She gives me a knowing look. I paste on my most innocent smile.
Edward will take you home whenever you're ready, Damien tells Jamie. Enjoy yourself.
Cool. Thanks. She gives me a goodbye hug, and Damien and I sneak back through the kitchen to the service area so that we aren't waylaid by anyone catching us leaving by the stairs. So where are we going, Mr. Stark? I ask as we step out into the cool night air. Do you fancy a walk?
Actually, I fancy a drive.
Usually, Damien parks in front of his house. Tonight, however, the driveway has been taken over by a valet parking team called in to handle the party traffic. I follow him around the house, frowning as we pass the attached garage. Where are we going?
Someplace you haven't seen yet.
Uh-huh. I'm intrigued, and as I take his hand, I glance around the property. We're in an area north of the house, away from the lights of the party. It's dark here, with the exception of soft landscaping lights cleverly hidden among the plants and stonework. He's right. Despite the amount of time I've spent on the third floor, I've done very little exploring of the rest of the house or the grounds. Of course, the landscaping near the structure has only recently been completed, and beyond that perimeter of flower beds and walking paths and picnic areas, the plants still grow wild, though I see that Damien has hired someone to cut away some of the brush and install soft lighting to mark footpaths through the undergrowth. It's so pretty out here, I say, as we follow a flagstone path that twines away from the house.
It is, he agrees, but his eyes are on me.
Watch the path, Mr. Stark, I say.
I'd rather watch you.
I grin as he wraps his arms around me and pulls me into a bone-melting kiss. The fire he set inside me only moments ago has not been fully extinguished, and now those embers burst back into flame. Here? I whisper, pressing my sex hard against his thigh, then moaning softly at the sweet torment of the returning pressure. Outside, on these hard, cold stones. My words may sound reluctant, but I know that my tone does not. Right then, I think I want nothing more than the press of stone against my back and the feel of Damien, hot and hard, inside me. His voice is low and sultry, with just a hint of a tease.
What exactly do you want me to do to you, Miss Fairchild?
His fingers brush my shoulder, sliding the spaghetti strap down my arm so that it hangs loose.
This?
He asks as he bends to brush his lips over the swell of my breast. I gasp, my chest heaving, the chiffon that still clings to my now erect nipple, rubbing provocatively.
Or maybe this?
He traces his fingers up my leg, higher and higher, until he grazes the soft skin between my thigh and my sex. Maybe, I whisper.
It would be sweet, wouldn't it?
He asks, as his hand moves up again, tracing the trimmed line of hair on my pubic bone, then dipping down to tease the same soft spot on my other leg. here under the stars. My hands on you, and only the night around us. My tongue on your breast, the cool air grazing your erect nipple, a whisper of cool wind brushing over your hot cunt. My legs grow weak, and I close my arms around his neck to keep from melting beneath his words and his touch.
Is that what you want?
Yes, I say. His smile is slow, and I draw in a ragged breath as he leans close. His lips graze the corner of my mouth, then my temple, then my ear. I feel his warm breath, and then the softest whisper of a word.
No.
I am not aware, but I must make some sort of noise in protest, because he chuckles.
No, he repeats. I have something else in mind.
And then he gently frees my hand from his neck and straightens my dress and tugs me forward onto the path. I follow, irritated, turned on, and very, very eager. A few moments later, he points out a flat area tucked in between two brush-covered slopes.
I'm thinking of putting in a tennis court there.
I glance sharply at his face, but it is carefully blank. Really? I say, working hard to keep my voice casual. I know how long it has been since he's played tennis. More, I know why he walked away from the game.
Maybe. I haven't decided. It's been so long, and I'm afraid.
He cuts off his words, his forehead creasing into a scowl. That it won't be fun, I suggest, trying to finish his thought. He doesn't answer, but I see the affirmation in his eyes. Well, if you do install a court, you can teach me how to play. I speak lightly. That will ensure that you have fun. I promise. Playing with me will be quite amusing.
Amusing?
He repeats, and I'm happy to hear the teasing note in his voice.
I'm imagining you in a tennis dress. Amusing isn't the word that comes to mind.
And will our rules apply then, Mr. Stark? I'm not sure how much tennis will get played if I'm wearing one of those outfits and no underwear.
I'm intrigued, Miss Fairchild. I think you may have made up my mind for me. I'll start interviewing construction companies in the morning.
Very funny, I say.
You laugh now, he says, but wait until I take you by the ball cage.
Now you're just talking dirty to me. He laughs and grabs my hand, and I hurry to keep step beside him. My mood is light, and I'm glad we escaped the party. Whatever drama had been clinging to me has dissipated. It is just me and Damien, and the wide night sky.
What?
He asks. I shake my head. I didn't say anything.
You're smiling.
Maybe I'm happy.
Are you?
He asks, his eyes roaming over my face.
So am I.
Damien. I move closer, craving a kiss, but it's his finger that my lips find.
Ah, he says. Start that up, and we'll never get where we're going.
So we are going somewhere? I was beginning to think we were simply taking a hike to Ventura County.
Actually, he says, we're here.
We've stopped in front of a vine-covered hill. Lovely, I say. But if you're planning to ravage me in the flowers, I should say that I would have been just as happy on the stone path.
I'll make a note for future reference, he says. But this isn't our final destination.
Oh? He doesn't answer my question. At least, not with words. Instead, he pulls out a key fob, presses a small red button, and a set of wooden doors, camouflaged with vines, begins to rise. Light from the interior emerges, spreading wider and wider as the door lifts higher. I feel as though there should be a soundtrack, ode to joy, perhaps, as the secret room is revealed. At first, I can see nothing because my eyes haven't adjusted to the abrupt change in lighting. But as Damien leads me toward the now open door, I see that this is a garage. A huge garage, to be precise. And as I stand in the doorway and look up and down the long, narrow structure, I count no less than 15 classic cars, all lined up and polished. The walls are white, as is the concrete flooring. The lights overhead are glaring white as well. For a moment, I feel like I've died and gone to car heaven. I turn and gape at Damien. You have got to be kidding me. You've barely finished the actual house, and yet you have a fully tricked out 15-car garage hidden in the hillside?
I didn't want a detached garage to mar the landscape, he says. Although, to be fair, the garage has been on the property long before the house. I built this 3 years ago while my architect was working out the plans for the residence. And just to clarify, it's a 20-car garage.
I shoot him a bored look. All this space in the hills and only 20? And detached from the house? Seriously, Mr. Stark, what happens if it's raining?
I use the tunnel access,
he says, nodding toward the far side, and a metal door over which is neatly printed the word Residence in red block letters. You really are a walking cliché, I say, but I'm laughing.
Not at all, he says. I'm a driving one.
He looks giddy, like a boy playing with his favorite toys on Christmas morning, and the mood is infectious. What kind of car is this? I ask, pausing by the one closest to the door. It is old-fashioned and open, and I can imagine women in flapper gowns riding with the top down, waving at boys and feeling smug in their daring.
A Gardner touring car, he says. But come here. This is my real prize.
We walk down two stalls to an ancient model. So polished and shined that it seems to glow as bright as the room itself.
A Baker electric car, he says. Thomas Edison actually owned this very automobile.
Seriously? I am duly impressed. That should be in a museum.
I offer it on loan quite often, he says, but not permanently. I don't see the point of owning extraordinary toys if I can't have them around to enjoy. Just as I don't see the point of having money and not using it to acquire interesting things, if not for myself, then for the people I care about.
I think about the Monet, and the camera, and the clothes, and all the other gifts he's showered upon me. Fortunately for those of us who are the recipients of your magnanimity, you have excellent taste.
Indeed I do, Miss Fairchild.
He holds out his hand.
Come on. I'll show you our ride for the night.
We move down the row of cars and stop in front of a low-slung, forest-green two-seater with a hood that seems longer than the car itself. All right, I say, unable to stop smiling. Tell me all about it. It's as if I've given him permission to sing.
Jaguar E-Type Roadster, he begins,
then starts to itemize all of the intricate details of this fine automobile that, he assures me, will transport us to our destination in luxury and style. I hope there won't be a pop quiz, I admit, because I didn't catch anything but the name and the fact that I'm very impressed.
That'll do, he says.
Did you rebuild it?
What makes you think that?
Edward told me about the Bentley. I can't quite imagine you all covered in grease and oil.
That's funny,
he says, with undeniable heat in his voice.
I have no trouble at all imagining you naked and slick with oil, spread out on a bed just waiting to be fucked.
Oh, I say. Oh. He chuckles, then opens the door for me. The car is so low that it is almost impossible to enter and exit modestly in so short a skirt. A fact that Damien clearly picks up on, as his hand slides up the back of my thigh, then slides between my legs. My body trembles from his touch, and I moan as he slowly thrusts two fingers inside me. I grip the side of the door, my balance awkward, my entire body quaking with desire. I want to close my thighs, but I can't. One foot is on the floorboard, the other on the concrete. Shift my position, and I will fall. But then again, I don't really want to shift my position.
Yes, he says. This is how I want you. Hot and wet and on fire for me. I want you fuckable, Nikki. Anytime, any place, I want you ready.
I'm always ready for you, I whisper, both because he wants to hear it and because it is true.
I should fuck you now,
he says, moving his fingers slowly in and out of me. My sex clenches, drawing him in, wanting more and more, wanting all of him.
I should bend you over the hood of this car and lift your skirt and spank your ass until it's red and throbbing. Then I should thrust my cock into your sweet, wet cunt. Is that what you want, Nikki? You can tell me. Tell me all the things you want me to do to you, Nikki. Tell me how you want me to fuck you.
My eyes are closed. My breasts are heavy. I am so wet, and I feel so full. He has 3, no 4 fingers inside me now, and my hips are gyrating, wanting him harder, faster, deeper.
Tell me, he repeats.
I want you to fuck me, I say. I want your hands on my tits and your cock deep inside me. I want you, Damien. Please, please. I want you so badly. His fingers slide out of me, and he traces slow circles over my clit, while his palm rubs lightly at my sex. I can smell my arousal, and I am shameless, shifting this way and that, so that the feeling grows. I'm close, so close, and I want to come in his arms. I don't care that we're in his garage, that I'm bent half in and half out of his car. All I want is Damien. All I want is for him to take me where I want to go.
Thank you,
he whispers as he pulls his hand away. Damien, I moan. Damn it, Damien, please.
Frustrated, Miss Fairchild?
You know I am.
Good.
The satisfaction in his voice makes me smile, despite my state of abject frustration.
Now, into the car.
I do as he says, then sit with my legs pressed tightly together in the hopes that the pressure will quell some of my rising, desperate need. He circles the car and gets in beside me, then looks over, his amusement obvious.
Legs apart, Miss Fairchild. You don't get off until I say you get off.
I shoot him a sour glance, but I comply.
I'm sorry, but I didn't hear you.
Yes, sir.
Good girl.
As I sit, lost in a haze of sexual frustration, he starts the car and maneuvers it out of its slot. I expect him to go back the way we came in, but he continues in the direction we were walking, which seems odd to me as all I see is a wall. As we get close, though, He presses a button on the dash, and a section of the wall slides away. Suddenly, we are in a dark tunnel lined with endless arcs of light that provide illumination all the way down, each arc lighting only as we approach it, giving the illusion that we are heading off toward infinity. I feel a bit like a Bond girl chasing down the bad guys. Where are we going?
Just wait, he says.
In front of us, no lights appear, and for a moment I'm afraid that something has gone wrong with Damien's billionaire escape route. But it turns out that we've simply reached the end of the hill. We've emerged onto a private road, Damien's, of course, and after following it for a while, we turn onto a twisting Malibu road and maneuver the hills until finally we reach the Pacific Coast Highway. You're really not going to tell me? I ask. I am still sweetly on edge. The car is low to the ground and powerful, and I can feel the thrum of the engine against my ass, and the vibration is more than a little enticing. My breasts feel heavy and swollen, and though chiffon is soft, my nipples are so stimulated that they are painfully erect. Damien stays quiet, but he eyes me sideways, and I see the amused smile playing at his mouth. Are we going into L.A.? It's almost 11.
I'm afraid I'm going to keep you up past your bedtime, Miss Fairchild.
I could protest, but it would be for show only. So I settle back in the soft leather and watch the ocean go by on my right. I feel Damien's eyes on me, though, and I turn to him, my expression stern. Eyes on the road, Mr. Stark.
I'd rather watch you, he says, but he turns back to focus on the road ahead.
He reaches up and adjusts the rearview mirror.
That's better, he says,
and his mouth tugs into a lazy grin. Like the view? I ask. My legs are apart, as he'd instructed, the hem of my dress hitting about mid-thigh.
I'll like it even better in a minute.
I glance sideways at him, suddenly suspicious. Oh?
I saw the way you were admiring Blaine's work, he says conversationally.
He's very talented.
The way he can portray arousal, shame, sexual longing. There are some at the gallery that show a woman in the throes of an orgasm. Spectacular, really.
I haven't seen those, I say.
Which one was your favorite this evening?
I liked them all, I say.
Did you? I thought I saw a note of particular interest on your face when you looked at the woman on the chaise. Do you know the one I mean?
Yes, I say. My pulse has picked up its tempo. I'm remembering the painting, and I'm anticipating where Damien is going.
What was she doing?
He asks. Touching herself, I whisper.
Her lover off to one side, her legs bound open.
Yes. I have to force the word out.
Take your shoes off, he says,
and I bend down to tackle the small buckles.
Lift your skirt up around your waist. I want you bare against the leather. Oh, God, Nikki, yes,
he says as I comply. The leather is smooth and cool against my red-hot skin. The vibrations beneath me seem even more erotic, and I feel wanton and wild.
Spread your legs, baby. Just like the woman in the painting.
His words, along with all they portend, are as erotic as his touch, and my already hyper-aware body kicks into overdrive. I'm aware of every movement, every brush of air against my skin, every beat of my heart, every tiny drop of perspiration that beads between my breasts. I work to control my breathing as I lift one leg and wedge it between the door and the dashboard. Then I take the other and hook my ankle over the gear shift box. I'm spread as wide as possible, and when I reach down to recline the seat, the motion shifts my hips up a bit. I make a small, strangled sound. My entire body tingles, but I am most aware of the heavy throbbing between my legs.
She lies there, silently begging for her lover. Her cunt is slick, her breasts tender, her nipples begging to be sucked.
Damien, please.
He doesn't touch her, though,
Damien continues, and I bite back a frustrated moan.
He leaves her like that, a breeze blowing on her aching cunt.
He leans over and adjusts the air conditioner so that a stream of cool air blows right between my legs. It's soft and decadent, and it makes me ache.
If he were kind, he'd let her touch herself. But if you look closely at the painting, you see that her hand is in the air, wanting, but not reaching. Did you notice that, Nikki?
No, I say firmly. I'm certain she was touching herself.
Are you? Well, that's the thing about art. It's different for everybody. Shall I tell you what I see?
I swallow and nod.
I see the man who is not in the portrait. The woman means everything to him, and nothing can please him more than to bring her pleasure. And not just a quick fuck and a fast orgasm, Nikki. No. He wants to create their own nirvana. To build pleasure upon pleasure, until the lines cross, and neither is sure if it's torment or delight.
I lick my lips, my mouth dry. I'm hyper-aware of my body, of the motion of the car, of my breasts, so tender now beneath the thin material.
He wants his lover to trust him, to surrender herself to him completely, to let him orchestrate the pleasures of her body. But he leaves the ultimate choice up to her. He lets her have one hand free, and that is the moment Blaine captured on the canvas.
He turns and looks briefly at me before returning his attention to the road.
And so the question is, does she touch herself, or does she trust him?
His voice is as warm and soft and intimate as the caress I crave.
You tell me, Nikki. What does the woman do?
She trusts him, I whisper. And then I close my eyes and lose myself to the motion of the car and Damien's promise of what is to come.
Chapter 16.
We're here,
Damien says, after a journey that must have been 1,000 miles. Here? I repeat. I glance out the window and see that we're pulling into the driveway of the Century Plaza Hotel.
Tug your skirt down, baby, he says, unless you want to give the valet a treat.
I shift in the seat and cover myself, then bend even farther and put my shoes on. My body is achy and needy, and I'm having trouble switching over to this new reality. We're checking into a hotel? The prospect is undeniably enticing.
You are, he says, as he pulls up to the valet stand.
A young man in a red uniform hurries to Damien's side of the car.
I'm just dropping off the lady, he says.
Now I'm completely confused. What are we...
Go register, he says. Don't worry, you already have a reservation. And I suggest a drink. Take a seat at the bar. It's a beautiful venue, and the bartender makes an excellent martini.
I am still in the car, and the valet is holding my door open. I wait for Damien to say more, but he has pulled out his phone and is scrolling through his text messages. I'm still not certain what the game is, but at least I've figured out that it is a game.
Yes, sir.
I slip out of the car, then remember my purse.
Wait a minute,
I say. Then I lean back in, making sure that the dress gapes enough in the front to give Damien an enticing view of what I wear underneath this dress, which is absolutely nothing.
Tip the young man, darling,
I say, once I'm standing upright again.
Then I turn and head into the hotel, making sure to swing my hips so that the skirt swishes as I walk.
I've not been in this hotel, and it's stunning. It takes me a moment to get my bearings, but I find both the registration desk and the lobby bar. I go to register first, smiling at the clean-cut man who greets me.
I'm checking in, Nikki Fairchild.
He taps at the computer screen, then looks up at me with an even wider smile.
I see that you're in our penthouse suite. Can I have someone take up your luggage?
Thank you, but no. I don't bother mentioning that I have no luggage.
One key or two?
Just one, I say. I am, after all, a woman alone. I consider going up to the room and lying naked on the bed, but Damien has told me to have a drink, and I am intrigued by both his plan for the evening and the thought of an excellent martini. Mostly, though, I don't want to give Damien any cause for punishing me, because I am certain that my punishment would be abstinence, and that is not something that is on my radar tonight. It's late, but the bar is full. There are very few women, and the men are mostly in suits. Considering the business attire, I'm guessing that there is a conference going on, because almost every table is full. I take a seat at one of the bar stools, as Damien said, and order a dirty martini. As I wait for the bartender to fix it, I glance out across the lobby, but so far, there is no sign of Damien. I'm not sure what to expect, and I have to fight the urge to pull out my phone and call him. Instead, I tell myself that patience is a virtue. Not necessarily one of my virtues, but a virtue nonetheless.
You look distracted. Anything I can help you with?
The voice belongs to a nice-looking man who sits one seat over from me at the bar. I finally see Damien, and am about to tell the man that no, I'm fine, when Damien meets my eyes, then very deliberately takes a seat at a nearby table with three other men.
No, thanks. I'm fine.
The bartender puts the martini in front of me. I take a sip, confused, and wonder what happens next. The man moves to the stool next to me, then leans even closer into my personal space. I consider sliding one stool over myself, but decide to remain put, my posture rigid, my body language very, very clear.
Apparently, though, the guy is illiterate in the body language department. Here for the conference?
He asks, and I can smell the liquor on his breath.
No, I say. I'm looking for some time alone.
Lucky you, says the man who cannot take a hint. Insurance regulations. Hours and hours of continuing education.
I say. I have my coldly polite face on, but he's apparently blind as well. He leans in closer still, and now he's at such an angle that he has to grip the bar itself or risk sliding to the floor. I give in to temptation and lean in the opposite direction.
I can think of better ways to spend a late night,
he says, his voice low and his intent unmistakable.
And we are in a hotel. You do the math.
I was never particularly good at math, I lie. I consider moving to a table, but Damien specifically told me to stay at the bar. And no matter what else, I am following his rules tonight.
You look like you'd be good at a lot of things,
the man says, staring at my tits. I turn back to the bar to find the bartender sliding a new martini in front of me.
From the gentleman, he says,
nodding toward Damien. How nice, I say, then smile at Damien, which seems to irritate my companion. Damien rises, says something to the men at his table, and strides to the bar. He stands right beside me, and as is always the case when Damien is near, I am suddenly hyper-aware of him, of my own body, of the rotation of the earth beneath us. I smile at him. Thank you for the drink, sir. I see the muscle in his cheek tighten when I say the last word, and I have to smile. He wasn't expecting that.
I hope you like dirty martinis.
The dirtier the better, I say.
Hey, you want to get lost? I was chatting with the lady.
Damien turns to him.
No, he says. I don't think so. I want her.
The guy's eyes go wide, but he recovers fast.
The lady wants to be alone. Apparently, he's now all about chivalry. Does she?
He looks at me, then speaks very slowly and very clearly.
Did you come here to be alone? Or to be fucked?
I have no idea how I'm supposed to answer. Beside us, the guy is apparently shocked into silence. I guess that depends on who's doing the fucking, I finally say.
I like your answer, Damien says. What's your name?
Louise, I say, my middle name coming unbidden to my lips. Damien grins.
Nice to meet you, Louise. I want you to come with me now.
I gasp, embarrassed, but also incredibly, undeniably turned on.
Now.
He holds out his hand, and I hesitate only a moment before taking it. Beside us, my companion stares with his mouth gaping open. Damien helps me off the stool and aims a friendly nod at the insurance dude.
Maybe next time,
he says, as the guy looks at Damien as if he's pulled off some kind of magic act. At least we're leaving him impressed and not pissed. I am giddy as I follow Damien. I want to laugh. I want to take his hand and twirl in the lobby. I want to slam him hard against the lobby wall and claim his mouth with my own. I want his hands on me. I want him inside me. I want him to fuck me, just like he said. And I want it now. Apparently, so does Damien. As soon as the doors close on the elevator, Damien backs me against the wall. His mouth is hard against mine, his hand under my skirt, two fingers inside me. I grind my hips against him, wanting him, craving more of him than I can get in an elevator.
God, Louise,
he says, and we both laugh. I thought someone might recognize us. It's my middle name.
I know, he says. And I think they were all too tipsy to care, and too out of town.
Could have been some paparazzi around.
Fuck the paparazzi,
Damien says, his words as harsh as sandpaper. I ease my body against his. I'd rather fuck you. He kisses me again, hard. That man was very disappointed, I say, when he breaks the kiss.
Just claiming what's mine. And adding in the public service of giving that man a fantasy to keep him occupied this evening.
He easily thrusts a third finger inside me, and I bite down on my lower lip to stifle a scream of pleasure.
Don't tell me you didn't like it.
I liked it, I say as the elevator doors begin to slide open. I liked it very much. He withdraws his fingers, then directs me out of the elevator, punctuating the movement with a light pat to my ass. Our room is at the end of the hall, and I am in awe when we step inside. The suite has a living area, and a dining area, and a separate bedroom. The door closes with a thump behind us.
For a woman who likes to be mine, you were certainly doing an excellent job of flirting with that man.
I am still gawking at the room, but at these words I turn, ready to defend myself, because I absolutely, positively did not flirt with Mr. Pushy. My words die on my lips, however, when I see the humor in Damien's eyes. But there's something else, too, and I know where this is going. I give a careless little toss of my head. What was I supposed to do? You were ignoring me. I was just making conversation.
He wanted more than conversation.
He takes my hand and pulls me into the dining area so that we are standing by the large, round table. He turns me around so that he is behind me, then slides his hand up my leg under my skirt.
You need to understand how completely you belong to me. Mine to pleasure,
he says, as his feather-light touch on my clit sparks a flurry of shudders within me.
Or mine to torment.
He lands a hard spank on my rear, and I cry out, the sound wrenched from my throat on a wave of pleasure.
You like that? He murmurs.
Dear God, yes. I lift my rear, giving him better access.
Spread your legs.
I comply eagerly, anticipating the feel of Damien inside me. I hear the metallic sound of his zipper, then the soft brush of material against skin as he takes off his slacks. He keeps his shirt on, and the starched cotton hem brushes against my skin when he leans over again in a way that is probably unintentional, but comes close to driving me crazy. His hand returns between my legs, the other one going to cup my breast. I start to rise, but hear his sharp censure telling me to stay as I am, bent over and ready for him.
You want to be fucked, don't you?
Yes, I moan. It's good that my hands are on the table. I don't think my legs alone could hold me up. I am little more than sensation. I am need and longing and sexual energy. And if he doesn't let me come soon, I fear that I will collapse from the pleasure of it all. He slides two fingers in me, and I groan as my body tightens around him. I'm close, so very close, and I bite my lower lip in expectation of a soul-rocking explosion. It doesn't come. For that matter, neither do I. And I whimper in protest as he withdraws his fingers, his hands going to a relatively chaste position on my hips.
Turn around, baby, he says. I want to see your face.
I turn, and his eyes say more than words ever could. I melt under the desire I see there, the need and the hunger. It rips through me until the only thing that I know in the world is Damien. Kiss me, I whisper. He does. And it is a violent, hungry kiss that bruises my lips until I taste blood. He pushes me back onto the sturdy table, then grabs the dress at the bodice and rips it down, baring my breasts. I cry out, arching up to meet him, my hand